it's the Southside's own Jonathan Hood. Weeknights on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
There's a blast deep into the night, and a two-run homer for Baez. And there it goes. Abreu massacres this ball to left center field.
Donna goes in motion left. Snap it to Michelle. He's running to the left. Angling, 25-20. Got a block for Grubb. 50, 10, 5. Touchdown, touchdown, touchdown. Don't win it. We're headed to Atlanta.
Trubisky's going to run it, and he is going to get a first down. Trubisky to the 42-yard line. Oh, my goodness.
In the ring, Steamboat's got him up. A slam. The player inside Cradlewood, too. He did it. He's done it. Steamboat's like Russell. And Blair has done it. Blair has done it.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. Weeknights on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
What's up, what's up? And welcome in. You're listening to Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. Weeknights at 7 here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. With open phone lines for you at 312-332-ESPN. 332-3776, the telephone number. Hit me up on Twitter, twitter.com, tweetjhood. On Snapchat, snapjhood. You follow me on Snapchat, I will follow you back guaranteed. For a three-hour ride, and then we head it over to Dan Libertard and Stu Gatz right here on ESPN 1000. On the program tonight, we will hear from Jesse Rogers, who covers the Cubs for ESPN.com. We'll get his thoughts coming up momentarily as the Cubs get ready to take on the Brewers. Friend of the program, former Bear from NBC Sports Chicago, Alex Brown, will be on the program because, you know, it's Meat and Cheese Week. So we will talk Bears and Packers with Alex Brown coming up at 8:10. Tales from the Hood, stories of sports, entertainment, everything else in between. Also, first time on the program, Ryan Harris. Yes. Maiden voyage on the program. Ryan Harris is the new color analyst for the Fighting Irish right here on the home of the Irish, ESPN 1000. Ryan and Paul Burmeister had a nice debut, I thought, in the first game the Irish had against Michigan. We'll talk to Ryan Harris, get his thoughts about the Irish as they go through the season. How far can they go? So if you're a Fighting Irish fan, make sure you get to your listening advice around 9:10 right here on ESPN 1000. And plenty of time for your thoughts as well. 312-332-ESPN is our phone number. Hope that you had a great Wednesday. Hope that you have a great Wednesday night here as we keep you company with a lot of different things we got to talk about here before we're done at 10 here on ESPN 1000. Let's start our first one with the Cubs. The Cubs are 81-57 coming into tonight's games. And they take on the Brewers again. The Brewers are three games behind in the National League Central. Brewers are 79-61. Cardinals are right there as well, 4.5 back. Then it's the Pirates and the Reds. But what we've seen here is an opportunity for the Cubs to be able to increase their lead against this Brewers team. And somehow they're having a hard time. What we're seeing here with this Cubs team on September 5th is what we have seen a lot of this season, and that's just a ball club that is inconsistent. I haven't seen the Cubs get hot all season. Hot meaning not the 6-7 game winning streak here and there. I'm talking about having sustained success, really coming through and really having successful months. People will measure success different ways. People look at over the 500 mark and they say, well, they're over 500. That's success. That's not the point. The point is that you can't get a bunch of Cub fans that you know that can tell you for sure that this is a World Series caliber ball club. Look at the team. As much as I like the offense for this Cubs team, I've liked the offense all season long on paper. The inconsistency comes from pitching, whether it's starting pitching or the bullpen. And yes, we have seen some problems with the offense here and there, but not to the point where I think that they should be underachieving. Even as the best team in the National League from a one-loss record standpoint, the Cubs are not in the same stratosphere as, say, Houston or Cleveland or Boston or even the Yankees for that matter, because they're too inconsistent. And so as I look at this Cubs team, as I mentioned in at March, I looked at this lineup and said, didn't feel right. Didn't like the Darvish signing. As I said that at the time. And March said, I don't know about this Darvish signing. And so now they were able to help that by having Cole Hamels on the team. And I like Cole Hamels on this team, along with John Lester. Two solid veterans that have been there and done that. Well, what about the rest of the rotation? And then the bullpen, we come to find out, and we're going to hear from Jesse in a moment just to clarify, about Morrow, he probably won't be back for the rest of the season. Not like you're relying on him, but the point is that you want to be able to have enough horses, especially in the bullpen, to be able to come through for this Cubs team. And it's about consistency. People can look at the success of the team and say, well, they had the best record in the National League. Well, that's great. They have the best record in the NBA East. Great. But what does that get you ultimately? Consistency down the stretch can increase the chances for the Cubs to really make some noise in the playoffs. You got your one World Series championship, Cub fans, but don't you want two? Don't you want three? You want to be able to find when this Cubs team can be able to strike while the iron's hot. And this Cubs team has failed to do that too often this season because of inconsistency, because there's always something. Jesse Rogers covers the Cubs for ESPN.com. He joins me, Jonathan Hood, here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Jesse, just before the game starts, let me ask you this. Give me your thoughts on the past couple of games for the Cubs. What stands out most in this series thus far?
Well, bad pitching, command issues for the bullpen mostly. Also, Mike Montgomery last night, but I don't worry too much about Montgomery. He'll be folded back into the pen, but they got to find some guys that can throw some strikes. I think Edwards and Cishek will be okay. That was the theme game one. But game two last night, man, they could not get any help out of the bullpen. You can't keep pitching Chavez and their A relievers. So that's what stood out to me, Jonathan. To stay close in games, you need some deficit guys. And nobody could throw a strike last night. So that's kind of been the theme the first two games. And Milwaukee took advantage.
Can you identify the circle of trust for Madden in that bullpen as we get closer to the playoffs? Because you wrote about it on ESPN.com talking about, you know, who can Madden really rely on here down the stretch?
I think Jesse Chavez and Pedro Strop are 1-2. Obviously, they may have different roles, although who knows? Maybe Chavez will be pitching in the ninth inning. He's shown he can handle pressure situations, but I think Madden might have his most faith in those two guys, and that's when Strop is not showing command problems. Then, of course, Edwards and Cishek, there's no doubt, although they've taken a little bit of a hit lately. Cishek's given up a couple home runs, and the other night lost his command. But, you know, those guys have got to come through for him because the news of the day today is Brandon Morrow may not return at all. And so you've got to go with the guys you have, and those are the four main guys. And from the left side, of course, Justin Wilson, almost by default, is also in that circle of trust. But not much else right now. De La Rosa has pitched okay. But they need a few more arms down the stretch and maybe even to October, guys that Madden can trust. But you kind of know the names. And without Morrow, it's a little shaky back there. Maybe Cishek and Edwards are just having a dip and they'll find their second or third wind here. Because if you can go into the playoffs with Chavez, Strope, Cishek, Edwards, and just use Wilson in you know spots where you need him, where you're not giving him too much pressure, that might be enough to get it done. But right now, that circle of trust seems a little bit small. But that doesn't mean it can't change in the coming days.
You didn't expect Morrow to return, did you?
I thought he might. I thought they were trying to get him one run late in the year, like in the last few weeks here into October. But whether I thought he'd return, I just didn't know if he'd return to elite form and be the closer. I mean, what if he pitched the seventh and you can move guys, you know, back to the eighth? And I don't know. I thought they'd give it one shot, but and they still might. It's not a no. It's just not a yes. And we've got to get to a point soon where it's a yes because we're running out of days. He's not even on a mound yet. You can't just throw him out there on a major league game if he feels okay. He's got to work his way back without a minor league rehab stint. It just none of it sets up well, even if he can return.
What's the lineup for the Cubs today against Milwaukee?
It's kind of what you'd expect with a righty on the mound after you know guys like Daniel Murphy had the day off yesterday. Murphy will lead off, Baez will bat second, Rizzo third, Zobrist four. That's what he's liked against righties lately. Chris Bryant will bat fifth. We'll see if Bryant heats up, if he moves up in the lineup. Schwarber sixth, Contreras, Quintana, and Ian Happ will play center field. Again, without Hayward, this is kind of Madden's go-to lineup against a righty right now.
And Rizzo's okay from last night, huh?
Yeah, he's fine. Took x-rays. Everything was good. They have some great treatment, you know, things that they can apply right after the game there when he came out. And he says he's feeling fine.
From ESPN.com, I know you've been busy, but I've been reading a lot on ESPN.com from Sam Miller. Did you see this piece?
Mm-hmm.
It's a good chicken and egg question. How come that pitchers mostly throw first pitch fastballs? I think that's it. You notice that in all across Major League Baseball, right? And usually batters will take
it. Yeah, the answer is easy. You look at the numbers 0-1 versus 1-0, it favors the pitcher. Obviously, you want to get ahead, and the best way to get ahead is with a fastball. It's hard to throw off speed, you know, over the plate, or harder, I guess. So that's pretty much why. In Joe's world, though, the 1-1 pitch is even more important. Like, you know, not always are you going to be perfect on the first pitch or the second pitch. But if you get to 1-1, the 2-1 or the 1-2 count is bigger in Madden's world. But in general, pitchers want to get ahead, and so they throw a fastball.
Well, if you're a hitter, aren't you seeing dead red and knowing that's going to be a fastball more times than not, especially if you're leading
off? It depends what kind of a hit. Yeah, I mean, yes. The answer is yes, except for it depends what kind of a hitter. The more dangerous you are as a hitter, the less likely you'll see a fastball. But right now, if you're, you know, I don't know, Addison Russell, you probably should look dead red, more than likely. But it's easier said than done. It's not like they're throwing it down the middle either. It's coming in 97, maybe on the corner. That's the best kind of fastball, or one with some movement, or a two-seamer that has some sink to it. So easier said than done, even if you're looking for it.
I would say that the best course of action if you're a pitcher is throw it like Hendricks, because he's throwing almost half a EFIS up there pretty much with his 87-mile-an-hour fastball.
Yeah, and that has movement no matter what he's throwing. Yes. So those are the best pitches, you're right, for a pitcher. Fastball is one thing, but a fastball with some movement in or out, cutter, sinker, those are the best kind of pitches. I mean, 97 down the middle can be hit a long way if you're not careful.
So good to talk baseball with you, Jesse. I tell you what,
thank you, my friend.
Just digging down deep with the baseball conversation. lastly, you know, the high holidays are coming up. You know.
Oh yes, they are. The Jewish holidays, Thanksgiving, Christmas is around the corner, and there's no better book to buy than Try Not to Suck, the Joe Madden biography. And you know, a good question that's come up lately is, if they win this division, which year has been Joe's best managing year? He keeps pointing to 2015. Other people say it's this year with the injuries. I still think it's last year, post-Cubs World Series, to get back to the playoffs. To me, should have been a long shot, but they made it. But you can read all about his philosophies and his managing style in Try Not to Suck. Good for a gift for any occasion.
Amazon.com is where you can also go get there as well, right?
Yep. You got it. Local bookstores. It's available everywhere, Jay Hood.
As always, Jesse, I appreciate your time.
Thanks for the plug. Talk to you later.
Good plug. Jesse Rogers, who covers the Cubs for ESPN.com, with us here on Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. We'll have Jesse at the bottoms of the hour to give us the reports of what's going on with the Cubs and the Brewers, as always, here on the program. Some thoughts here about Khalil Mack I want to get to. And again, we're going to hear from Alex Brown coming up at 8:10 about his thoughts. This will be the first time that he and I have been discussing this move of the Bears getting Khalil Mack. There's been so many articles written about what the Bears did. As I mentioned to Spice Adams yesterday, man, it's so un-Bears-like to see the Bears do this. The testicular fortitude, the balls, if you will, to be able to pull off this deal. It's the biggest trade the Bears have had since Jay Cutler. Because even at the time with Jay Cutler, and I remember this like it was yesterday, because the last time I was on with Cap, by the way, on his TV show, the last actual time I was on television with David Kaplan was when I pointed into the camera and said, there's no way the Bears are going to trade for Jay Cutler with Dan Pompey sitting next to me. I think Pompey had more information on that than I did. That's the last time that I was on that TV show, pointing right to the camera. No way that this is going to happen. No way that the Bears are going to trade for Jay Cutler. The Bears don't make deals like this. And Dan Pompey's like, I kind of think they may. Because you know that Pompey's locked in, right? So that's the last time. I was like, well, there's no need of me being on television anymore, making these bold predictions. But with it being Meat and Cheese Week, you know that for years, no matter when you started watching Bears football, the thing that you always knew is that the Bears would have a pretty good defense against whether it was Brett Favre or whether it was Aaron Rodgers or Don Majkowski or whoever the quarterback was for the Green Bay Packers. You know, more times than not in your life as a Bears fan, the defense was going to come to play. Now, there are some years where the Bears really struggled defensively, but really the distinguishing characteristic of Bears football traditionally has been the Bears. Just go back to those old NFL films. Just go to YouTube and see all those films of Buffon and Butkus and seeing what they did in 85 and seeing what Lovie Smith's defenses did. Usually the defense is the calling card for the Bears. You can't find the old films of great Bears offense because it's not really there. As much as I respected Jim Miller here and there and Eric Kramer here and there, you know, and Jay Cutler very few times. But, you know, the point is that it's not been necessarily over the last, for me, 30, 40 plus years, a team that you could say, boy, I remember when they had a great offense. It just wasn't there. Even that great 85 Bears team we continue to hear about, as much as I respect Jim McMahon was not as prolific as some of those other great quarterbacks of his own era. But he was able to get a Super Bowl championship with the Bears. But the point is that defense usually is the thing that stands out about the Bears. And so I saw this packet here regarding Khalil Mack. And it really stands out, the money that he will be making, obviously. Most guaranteed money, current contracts. Aaron Rodgers of the Packers, $103 million, and Matt Ryan, $100 million, and Matt Stafford at $92 million, and Khalil Mack's right there at $90 million. It was the greatest chicken, actually, the greatest, I guess, going back and forth to find out exactly who's going to get what money between Aaron Donald and Khalil Mack. A great back and forth, because they were just trying to figure out, hey, who's going to make the most money? Who's going to be the defensive player that's going to make the most money? I would love to see those text messages back and forth. Because you know that they were playing a game, right? They played a game against the system. And guess what? They won. They beat the system. It's just a great chicken fight between the two. Just like, nope, I'm not going to go. You go? You're going to go? No, I'm going to go. Wait. So Aaron Donald gets his money and thinks that he's set. But then Khalil Mack gets traded, and then the Bears make this all-time move. The biggest contract in the history of the Bears is pretty strong. Khalil Mack asked a number of things by the media. How it feels to be back on the field, number one.
That's what I do, man. That's what I love. You know what I'm saying? It's everything right now. Getting back into the groove and practicing the meetings. I love the grind, and that's what the feeling is right now.
And then taking on Aaron Rodgers.
I mean, he's one of the best. He can get out of the pocket on you and still throw the ball, keep his eyes downfield. He's good at everything you want from a quarterback.
What are the challenges rushing him, knowing that he does?
Exactly. So that's definitely the challenge, making sure you contain him. And, we're looking forward to the challenge.
Don't worry about it, young blood. You know, we just got to get after the quarterback. It's all good, baby.
He is so chill sounding. Just like, you know, it's just Aaron Rodgers, man. I do my job.
It's me off the air.
Seriously, right?
Yeah. Yep. So many ways. Just like, yeah, how much are you gonna play against the Packers?
I mean, we'll see, man. We'll see on Sunday. We'll see on Sunday under the lights. What's the word?
What's the word? The word is meat and cheese week. This is one of the Bears with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 ESPN app. So give me a little music here, Felix. I need a little music when we talk about Khalil Mack, because he's just chill. And so I'm going to use the Khalil Mack chill voice to talk about his accolades. This is what the Bears are getting. As I said at the time, yes, the Bears need to make this deal. And the reason why is because he's a top five player. He's a top five player at his position. At a time in which I think that defense is not getting as much due as it should because it's an offensive league, I still believe that you got to have balance. And I believe that Khalil Mack will bring that balance to the Bears. So Khalil Mack's accomplishments, man. Three-time Pro Bowler, two-time first-team All-Pro, 40 career sacks in four seasons, started in 64 games in four seasons, Khalil Mack. Khalil, Aaron Rodgers, though.
I mean, he's one of the best. He can get out of the pocket on you and still throw the ball, keep his eyes downfield.
So what about them sacks, though? Last three seasons, Chandler Jones, Khalil Mack, Von Miller. Yeah.
I mean, we'll see, man. We'll see. We'll see on Sunday. That's.
He's accounted for 39% of the Raiders' sacks in the last three seasons. The highest percentage in the league. Highest percentage of team sacks. Last three seasons, Cameron Wake, Chandler Jones, Khalil Mack.
That's what I do, man. That's what I love. You know what I'm saying? It's everything right now. Getting back into the groove and practicing the meetings. I love the grind, and that's what the feeling is right now.
You got to love that, right? If you're a Bears fan, that you have someone that's top five of the position that the Bears actually traded for. As I mentioned before the draft, my eyes are completely fixated on Ryan Pace, the general manager for the Bears, because this is his second chance. Now that the Fox era is over and the Nagy era is here, it's really not about the head coach for me. It's really not. Because it's not like Matt Nagy is just like this guy that's just going to take over the world and he's just this dynamic personality. No, he's a guy with a hat and a clipboard, and he's got the whole menu in front of him, and he's going to try and make Trubisky better. But Ryan Pace is the guy that just made the defense even better than what it was. He's got Khalil Mack. Total domination, baby.
Let them learn a little about you right now. What's the Mack attack all about?
Oh, domination.
Oh, man. Think about that. Mack, the last four seasons, 40 sacks. Next closest was Bruce Irvin with 15. Tackles, 304. Next closest is Malcolm Smith with 225. Defensive snaps, 3,700 snaps. Now, keep in mind that he doesn't get hurt. At least, again, knock on Formica. He's not been able to have any kind of injuries whatsoever that has kept him out of games. Almost 3,700 snaps. The next closest, Travis Carey, 2,600 defensive snaps. So the resume speaks for itself. As we talk about the Bears here on ESPN 1000, ESPN app. Oh, by the way, from a number standpoint, Green Bay is 12-3 against the spread in its last 15 games against the Bears. Additionally, Green Bay is 5-2 against the spread in its last seven home games against the Bears. So, look out for that. And interesting to note that from the standpoint of the Oakland Raiders, you would think that the Raiders would understand how great Khalil Mack is. Maybe they do, maybe they don't. Because I remember John Gruden, when asked about Khalil Mack, how come he's not with the Oakland Raiders? How come he's with the Bears? Why did this deal take place? John Gruden just threw his general manager on the bus.
I'm not going to get into the negotiation. Reggie and Tom Delaney and the people that were negotiating were involved in that. I know there's, you know, maybe some feeling that I was involved on a day-to-day negotiation. I had nothing to do with it. So we were at a standoff, and something had to happen, and here we are.
Why is he moving his hands around? That sounds like nervousness from John Gruden, moving his hand. Or I could hear the pounding, maybe the pounding of his head for allowing this to happen. He says he had nothing to do with the negotiations, which is not true. It's just not true. Do you realize that he's got more stroke in that organization than the general manager? Because he's a guy with the bowl haircut and the 10-year contract. That's why he's got more stroke than anyone else. But interesting to note from SI.com, what does John Gruden really think of Khalil Mack? Interesting piece here. Robert Klimko writes this. Here's an especially relevant thought from John Gruden when he worked for ESPN. From draft day in 2014, he reminds me of C.O. Moore, whom the Raiders drafted with the fifth overall pick. Moore was then a promising third-round pick of the Raiders who had success in 2013 as a rookie, but he wasn't the sort of player to whom one commonly compares a top-five draft pick. Gruden went on to say that he thought the Raiders should have drafted Johnny Manziel. Everyone must know something I don't know about this guy. He would have preferred Johnny Manziel over Khalil Mack. Strike one. Gruden, we later learned, implored the Raiders to take Manziel at the time when he publicly acknowledged that if he returned to the NFL, his preference would be to coach the Raiders. Ian Rappaport said this. According to three sources, John Gruden spent round one of the draft imploring the Raiders to take Johnny Manziel. Just imagine what if, right? I mean, look. There's a lot of people that fell in love with Johnny Manziel. My partner, Jeff Dickerson, fell in love with Johnny Manziel. I did not. I saw a guy that would not be a difference maker, but he did. Many people did. I did not. I saw him in college. I was not the biggest fan. I thought, this is really fun for college. Whee! He's moving all over the place. And he's doing the money sign. That's really cool. I said, but this is not going to work for the NFL. And guess what? It didn't work for the NFL. Hell, it's not even working for the CFL. Okay. So let's just look at it that way. Also, Gruden spent time with Mac in practice the week before the 2016 game in Mexico City when the two chatted about the last time Mac faced the Texans quarterback Brock Osweiler. Mac sacked Osweiler five times. Mac was incredulous that Denver only blocked him on one-on-one in the game. I love watching Khalil Mack practice. He sets a tone for the entire organization with how he practices. So there's a positive there for Gruden. But I think that the money shot for this is the last part of this about Khalil Mack. ESPN's Paul Gutierrez asked Gruden in March to define one of his catchphrases, categories for players, Gruden grinders. I just like guys who love to play, guys that will compete, guys that will play for nothing. We haven't signed a lot of household names around the league, but I think we've got some guys here that are going to be consistent. Everyday grinders, man. Guys are going to compete their ass off and fight for inches and know how to set a tone. Guys that will play for nothing. Who do you think that was a shot at? It wasn't the guy that was holding out trying to get more money. It definitely, he was taking a shot at Khalil Mack. Guys will play for nothing. You mean like your quarterback, right? I just tell you, I'm happy the Bears have someone that's a top five difference-making talent and that the Raiders have really expressed themselves and shown themselves as being far behind. I mean, they think they're going to outscore teams and not have a talent like that. And again, draft picks are valuable for sure, especially if you get the right draft picks. But clearly the Bears feel like they're on a trajectory to go in the right direction, that they feel that they can win in the next 2-3 years. And the Raiders, I guess, they could just hang around. I don't know if that's the right thing to do, especially with a Raiders fan base that's looking to win too. It's the Raiders that's going to move to Las Vegas, and they want to be able to be in the Super Bowl at some point. And Gruden's there, and he's got the fan base whipped up, but Well, Gruden's loss is the Bears' gain because I think that it's about pure domination when it comes to Khalil Mack. I just quote these numbers for you. John Gruden didn't think he was good. John Gruden believes that at the time that Johnny Manziel was a better pick. And quietly behind closed doors, you might want to get Johnny Manziel as your quarterback. And the Raiders are like, no. No, we like Derek Carr. And you know, you should like Derek Carr. Clearly, they made the right choice. Domination.
Let them learn a little about you right now. What's the Mac Attack all about?
Oh, domination.
I go work like a doctor. When I rock the mic, you got to like it.
Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000. Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. Weeknights on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. It's the Cubs, it's the Brewers, it's Jesse Rogers with more. Jess?
All right, Jay Hood, no score, bottom two, each team with a hit in the first inning, but no damage. Daniel Murphy led off with an infield single, but two batters later, he was erased when Anthony Rizzo hit into a 6-3 double play. Then the Cubs went down in order in the top of the second. Meanwhile, Jose Quintana gave up a hit in the first, but no damage for him either. No score, bottom two. Back to you guys.
All right, Jesse, thank you. As you're listening to ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. Weeknights on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Don't forget to hit me up on Twitter, twitter.com, tweetjhood, or on Instagram, igjhood. Don't forget the Under the Hood podcast as well. If you miss a show, if you don't listen to it live, listen, we've got the podcast for you. Whether it's SoundCloud, whether it's on iTunes, Apple Music, whether it's on the TuneIn app, find my show, the Under the Hood podcast with Jonathan Hood. Type in my name, Jonathan Hood. It'll pop up right there. Just type it up right now. Type in Jonathan Hood. type in Under the Hood Show. You'll be able to get the podcast downloaded there. Plenty of guests, and you'd never miss a show if you just download the podcast Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood right here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. So glad you're with us. We're going to hear from Alex Brown coming up at 8:10, his thoughts about the Bears, because it is meat and cheese week, because it's Bears and Packers, and we'll talking to you about it right here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. So I'm working with Eric and Felix tonight, and on my Facebook wall, facebook.com, I asked a question, and again, Felix, keep in mind, we have to make sure that people know. See, Felix, like, if he wasn't working here, he'd be a troll. And so, he I mean, and I don't know how much that pays, but I think that he would be, I don't know if there's security in that or if you get benefits for that, but he would be an internet troll. And because he likes to read, he likes to find out what people are saying. And so he wants me to ask these meatball questions. Now, you can say anything you want about this show. You think it's bad, you think it's great, somewhere in between. But the one thing I will not do is I will not do meatball radio. I already did that in the 90s. So I know what that's like. I already did that kind of radio in the early 2000s. So I know what that's like. So in 2018, I kind of feel like the show's evolved, where I'm just not asking you, you know, Derek Lee or Anthony Rizzo, who do you like? I'm not doing that, those shows. But what I will do.
It's a pretty good debate, though.
Yeah, well, again, that's why I'm not doing meatball radio. You can have spaghetti with your meatballs with that topic. But for me, I feel like we can be able to raise the level of conversation. But again, Felix continues to drag me back to Trollsville. And so he asked me to ask a question to you. I'm going to put it that way. He asked me to ask a question to you on the Facebook wall, facebook.com, Jonathan Hood. And that's asking, like, who is the second best player in the NFC North? Right? The second best player in the NFC North. Now, Felix and I, and Felix, you can tell the audience, the UTH Nation, that you feel like I feel like Aaron Rodgers is the best player in the NFC North and has been for quite some time, is he not?
Absolutely. He's the number one guy. And if anybody argues that, they're meatheads for sure.
Right?
Absolutely.
Eric, he's the best player and has been for some time.
If you could choose one of the players of anyone in the NFC North to be on your team in any position, you pick him, no doubt, just because how much he changes the game. Absolutely.
If he walked away from the game today, he would be a Hall of Famer.
Yes.
He's already there.
Yeah.
Now, I think the one disappointment, if you're a Packer fan, is that you only have one Super Bowl championship. Now, again, it's one. Some organizations can't even get there. Here's looking at you, Cincinnati. Here's looking at you, Jets. Here's looking at you over the years. Here's looking at you, so many, Jacksonville. All these teams that could not get there. So my point is that when I saw some of this yesterday. I've not opened up the Facebook today to see it because you click on turn off notifications because I got tired of my phone ringing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So because it just got so much, right?
So, you're welcome.
Yeah, no question. So Aaron Rodgers is number one. I'll ask you guys, number one on your list is Rodgers. Is it Rodgers?
Yes.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Okay. Number two on my list is Khalil Mack.
Me too.
Same here.
Okay. Yep.
Number three on my list is Dalvin Cook.
He's high for you. I got Matthew Stafford as three for me.
I also got Matthew Stafford at number three.
Four is Stafford for me. And you guys?
I got Everson Griffith as my number four, the DN for the Vikings.
And I have Harrison Smith.
Okay, he was on my honorable mention for sure. Zach Rhodes also honorable mention.
You know, on that Mount Rushmore. Like on the bottom.
Yeah, there's a little inscription. It's honorable mention.
There are some statues there on the bottom, but you can't see it because it's just rock. You can't really make out the nose and the ears.
It's open for interpretation, too.
Right. So, I mean, those are my four. Now, could you guys look on the Facebook, because I won't look, on the Facebook wall, facebook.com, Jonathan Hood, what are people saying about this question? Because it seems obvious to me that the second best would be, I mean, the first would be Aaron Rodgers. And then you can make the debate about number two. Like, for instance, you can really look at Khalil Mack and say, well, Khalil Mack has not played in the NFC North, so how do you know? But I would say, going into the season, because he's top three at his position as far as a defensive player, Khalil Mack should be at least second on that list. What else? What are people saying?
I've seen an Everson Griffin. I've seen tons of Khalil Mack, obviously, here. I also saw Dalvin Cook, and then another one I've seen more popular is Matthew Stafford at 2.
But here's my problem that I saw yesterday on this thing. I guess I have to log in at some point. And that is that some are saying that Khalil Mack is the best player in the NFC North. Can that be already without him taking a snap? Without, I mean, as great as he is he greater than Aaron Rodgers at his position? Like, does Mack do more for his position than Aaron Rodgers does for his? I would say no, that's not the case.
I would say no, but I don't think the gap is that large. I think as much as Khalil Mack adds to the defensive side of the ball and how he makes everyone else better, Rodgers does as well, but just a little bit more on the offensive side. I don't think that gap's too big.
See, I think the gap is huge. That's because fair. If you look at the top five in the league overall, top two is Brady and Aaron Rodgers, right? Wouldn't you say?
In the NFC?
Just NFL overall. NFL. I would think Brady and Rodgers are the two top quarterbacks, right? But they're also the top two players in the league because people would go crazy if they had a chance.
I say Aaron Donald over Tom Brady, in my opinion. I think Aaron Donald, Aaron Rodgers would be a good conversation too.
Aaron Donald or Tom Brady?
See, it's hard to go against quarterback because it's so important.
Well, here's what people will do because we get to the lowest common denominator in the conversation about measuring rings as success. Now, again, besides the rings, Tom Brady is great at his position and the best.
Absolutely.
He's the GOAT. I mean, we're seeing this in real time. See, the one thing I won't do, again, I'll leave that to everybody else because somehow in today's sports conversation, especially bloggers and talk show hosts and those that do podcasts, so many people feel like if you just go Oppo, that you get more attention. And actually being able to me, celebrate the best. I'm not looking for attention, but I think that if I'm making the right points about how great someone is in this generation, I think that that works. I think that the history is always going to be on the side of me based on the numbers, based on the accomplishments. Now, with Tom Brady and Aaron Donald, again, Donald has not won a championship yet, but he's great at his position. Tom Brady's great, but Brady's done more than Aaron Donald has.
And I think it goes back to the position as well. A quarterback can kind of take a whole team. Like, Tom Brady has taken that team to the Super Bowl. They've never had terrific rosters around him. Being a defense, an interior defensive lineman, you're going to need a lot of more around him to make it happen for that run. So because of the position, I guess Brady is. I just, Donald, talent-wise, Aaron Donald might be better.
Okay, so again, looking on this Facebook wall, and again, this is where Felix's eyes always goes to. He's not worried about the great points. He's worried about the trolls. So you tell me, because I know you bathe in this. I mean, you get in the shower, you're just hoping that the trolls just wash over you. Like, so you tell me, like, there's some people are making a case. Are they not that Mack is the best?
Yes. You had a discussion with someone there that if Mack was better than Aaron Rodgers, and they pointed out NFL Network's top 100, and they pointed that, who was it? Khalil Mack is number 5. And Aaron Rodgers is number 6 on the list. So that would mean automatically, apparently, that would mean Khalil Mack is better than Aaron Rodgers.
Well, clutch my pearls. I'm completely wrong there. I mean, 5 and 7. That's such a gap between those two. Oh, my. I won't do the meatball thing, Eric.
There's no room for argument there. The numbers are the numbers right there. NFL top 100, this says it all. You can't differentiate at all.
It's ridiculous, man. It's ridiculous. Put that on the poll in some way, shape, or form at ESPN 1000. Speaking of trolls. Put that out there and see. Oh, no. Out. It's 8:30. That's when you come in. Just get out of here. We're having a conversation about Khalil Mack. Again, Stosh comes, and then he gets closer to the glass. Why does this happen, Eric, every night? Why?
And he goes to check if there's trash around you. I don't know why he does that.
Yeah. Get out. Yeah. Yes, I did say get out. Yes.
10 o'clock.
Thanks.
Leave the glass.
It's 10 o'clock every night. What is he saying?
I don't know.
What is he saying?
I think he's mad.
He's not.
He's mumbling, telling me to get out of here. That's all I heard. I just heard tell me to get out of here.
Yes, I did. He said something in Polish that I think, something about a dupa. Somebody.
I don't know what that means. It sounds dirty. Just the P and the A next to each other.
It's ass.
All right.
It's dupa, he said. So something in Polish. I do speak. I have a few Polish words that I do speak.
Ah, dzień dobry.
Slippery slope here, just throwing out. I'm scared of what we're doing here.
Again, I just think that and put that on the poll, as I mentioned before, Stosh interrupted us here. Every night he just comes in. We're trying to do a program here. Does he not? Does he do that to Channel 7, by the way?
Just strolls in on the weather. Oh, rain tomorrow, huh? Just starts yelling.
I would love for him to do that on Channel 7.
Just on live TV. I would love it.
There's Cheryl there. There's a fire on the south side. What are you doing here?
What time finish?
10:30, of course. It's the 10 o'clock news. Kraszewski, hello. I'd love for him to just stroll on the Channel 7 and do that. Get out of here. Put that on the poll at ESPN 1000. This is how people look at that. Because to me, I think that the list that we have here with Aaron Rodgers, with Khalil, and Mack, again, has not taken a snap yet. But Khalil Mack is right there in the team photo as a top five talent. Now, here's the thing. I'll ask you both. Do you have someone else defensively on your, even in your top seven, top 10?
Akeem Hicks.
All right.
In the north, you're saying? I have Everson Griffin in mind. Yes.
Everson Griffin. Yes. Anyone else?
I mean, I think Harrison Smith would be, if not five, he'd be six for me as well.
I mean, I could definitely make the case that without even blinking that Khalil Mack is the best defensive player in the NFC North.
I totally agree.
Anton?
And quite frankly, stays healthy and is dominant, he could be the best in the NFC. That very well could happen too. But we'll see. I just found it interesting, some of the people yesterday talking about how Khalil Mack is the best player in the NFC North, and I just think that that's not right. As long as Aaron Rodgers has a heartbeat, that guy is the best. Because Aaron Rodgers is cool. He's not worried about, like, if he has a complaint, he'll let you know about it. I like that. It's the new Aaron Rodgers now. That guy's good. Now he's complaining. You're going to trade my quarterback coach? They got rid of his quarterback coach in the offseason. Wasn't happy about that a couple of years ago.
Jordy Nelson.
Not happy about Jordy Nelson. So he's wearing it on his sleeve. He's letting you know, like, he's not happy. So that is definitely a positive that he's now comfortable in his own skin to be able to complain openly about what's going on with this Packers team. By the way, some thoughts here from Clinton Dix. Oh, he spoke today, huh? So, Clinton Dix says the division is really strong right now in the NFC North.
To be honest, when I came into this league, this division wasn't up to par. But, 5 years in, I'm looking at this division now, and it has the potential to be one of the best divisions in this league. A lot of ball played on both sides from, Chicago, Vikings, even Detroit. I mean, they have a lot of good weapons in all three of those teams. And, this division is pretty strong now.
We had Leroy Butler on the program as well from WSSP in Milwaukee, the Super Bowl champion. Leroy Butler, he was Leroy when he was a kid, but when he got that championship, he became Leroy. So Leroy Butler talks about Aaron Rodgers as well. He gives Green Bay a shot to win the division.
The Green Bay Packers still have Aaron Rodgers, one of the best quarterbacks in the league, if not the best. You feel like they have a slight edge. But I don't think, as in the past, Jay Hood, that you can just mark up the Green Bay Packers of winning this division. I don't think you can just do that anymore. You know, you have to go through and say you got to play this. This is going to be one of the toughest divisions because there's a lot of unknowns. There's a lot of moving parts. And you would think that the best team, from coach to the last player on the bench would probably be Minnesota, but that doesn't say a whole lot. But so if you got Aaron Rodgers, you feel good about the changes that you're seeing.
Leroy Butler, always a shot. As long as he supports his Packers, right? Always a shot. Can I tell you something about the Chicago Blackhawks you might have known about the Blackhawks? The Blackhawks hit the ice at the United Center this fall with an exciting original six matchup as they take on the Toronto Maple Leafs on Sunday, October 7th. Great tickets are still available for the home opener, and all season long, come see Jonathan Toews, Patrick Kane, Duncan Keith, Brent Seabrook skate with rising stars like Alex. What is it? Is it Alex DeBrincat? What am I missing here? What's that guy's name? DeBrincat. Call Carmen.
I'm so not sure, so I don't want to say it.
I know who Nick Schmaltz is. But visit ChicagoBlackhawks.com, pick out your favorite games, and purchase tickets to see your Blackhawks play right now. All right, we'll hear from Alex Brown coming up at 8:10.
I'm not internationally known, but I'm known to rock the microphone.
Hey, yo, Jay Hood. Talk that barbershop talk, dude.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. Weeknights on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
You know, as a White Sox fan, what I want to see is for young players to be able to be called up and do something about this service time thing. This has to stop because there's so many quality superstars in AA and AAA that need to have playing time. One of them is Eloy Jimenez for the White Sox, right? He's not going to come up more likely until, what, April 16th of next season. Rick Hahn talked about the patience is being tested right now with Eloy because he wants to play.
As you've heard me say throughout this process, probably going back 10, 11 months now, this is a year in which patience is going to be of the utmost importance in this rebuild. And you heard me say at times we're going to be tested, and this is certainly one of these times. At this point, we don't feel it makes sense for Eloy at age 21 to make an appearance at a third level this season. From a baseball and player development standpoint, we view him as continuing to improve. He has had a very good season offensively, and in our opinion, it's in everyone's best interest for him to continue to develop into the well-rounded, impactful player that we project him to be. One thing that I hope does not get lost in this is how excited we are about his future and how big of a part he is of our future. Eloy understands that. He has heard it from me. He has heard it from others. His agents have heard it from me. And he is very well positioned to make a significant impact at the big league level at age 22 next year, which is a fantastic path for any potential impact player to be on. You did hear me also say earlier in the year that if he had spent the entire season in the double A level at age 21, that would have been consistent with a potential star path. Obviously, we moved him up mid-year based on his performance at double A, but at this point, we don't feel it makes sense for him to move to a third level at age 21.
Okay, it's still you like to have him out there. You like to have him an opportunity to play. The service time thing is holding back stars that we could be seeing right now. And it's not just the same thing with the Toronto Blue Jays organization as well. Vlad Guerrero Jr. should be playing on the big club right now. He's hitting like 400. So it's really insane. That's got to change at some point. The Le'Veon Bell story. Oh, my God. Now the team is turning on Le'Veon Bell. His own teammates. Oh.
As I combine all the juice from the mind. Heal up, wheel up, bring it back, come rewind.
Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000